Hello, dear ones. Well, it is indeed a privilege to be sharing this time with you and with my beloved friend La, who I'm so proud to be making your debut with you. La's going to be an incredible teacher. She's going to go beyond all of us. So she's been a very important friend in my life. And Tara, as I was saying, Tara and I just met tonight. We've talked on the phone. We've emailed. And I said, Tara, I love you, but how do you take your tea? So it was great. And it's so great to see all of you. I'm so happy to be here with you. And your presence here is such a generous gift to yourselves and to the three of us, to each other, and to the world, for that matter. One of the wonderful gifts for me of traveling around as both a student and a teacher now of the Dharma is the connection I feel with so many people on this path, in this country and in the world. And we're all part of a much larger community of people throughout the planet who are participating in exactly what we're doing here, waking up, sitting, and have been doing so for, what did you say, 2,600 years? I mean, we have ancestors that have been doing this for 2,600 years. And sometimes we can get really upset about and despair about what's going on. But when I think about that, how many people are actually on this path and have been on this path, I take great comfort in that. So I take great comfort in your presence here tonight, because I know that many of you had to do a lot to be here and that you had to make it a priority and that there are probably people who are picking up the slack for you. And so we hold them on retreat too, people who are taking care of our children, our pets, elderly people we might be responsible for, people who are covering us at work. We have to do so many things sometimes to come here and arrive. And probably, to me, the most important way to simplify our lives is to get rid of the type of laziness that makes us take on thousands of less important tasks than our own personal and collective transformation. So congratulations, you decided not to do that. You're here. And your presence here is a reflection of your commitment to that. So thank you for choosing to be here and for creating the wonderful container that benefits us all of practice. Retreats for me bring home in such a powerful and direct way the interdependence of the individual and collective consciousness. Because here we are as yogis contributing to this incredible energy with our practice, our beautiful practice. So we're each contributing to it, but we're each drawing from it too. Sometimes when I'm in a room meditating with other people, I just fall into that vastness, the vastness of that energy that is holding me with that container that we create together. And we each contribute to that container. And so what a wonderful way to begin the retreat by reflecting on our aspiration for the weekend. You're going through the three refuges in the beautiful way that La did. And the other thing we'd like to invite you to do is to abide by the precepts, the five precepts in the Buddhist tradition, and just commit to them for the weekend. And you might think about what else you want to commit to when the weekend is over, because that also adds to the container, that wonderful, safe container that holds all of us. And they inter-are, these five wonderful precepts that are known in my tradition, the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, the Order of Interbeing, as the five mindfulness trainings. Because precepts conveys something that kind of like commandments. It's a sin if you break one. No. That's not how we approach this. They're mindfulness trainings. We can notice when we have done or said something and during the course of our lives that might not be quite in keeping with them. And just simply correct the course. Not make a big deal about it, but simply notice and correct the course. The thing that I love about the precepts or the mindfulness trainings is they inter-are. When you practice one deeply, you practice all five. And it's such a beautiful thing because when you are, as you see into them on deeper and deeper levels, you understand and see into the others on deeper and deeper levels, and they provide us with more and more comfort. So the first one is simply reverence for life. It means that we respect all forms of life. It's commonly known as that we make a commitment not to kill anything. And I was telling Tara that this one was really special for me because in my tradition, we can commit to receiving the five mindfulness trainings in a transmission ceremony. And I was saying to her, well, the very first retreat I went to years and years ago, somebody said, well, Sherry, it was actually Sister Chong Kong, are you going to take these trainings? And I said, no, I can't. I'm a cop. I carry a gun for a living. And she said, well, who else would we want to carry a gun for a living except somebody who will do it mindfully? Duh, you know, it just like really woke me right up. Okay, yeah, I can get with this plan. So reverence for life, very, very beautiful. And in the second training, we just basically, the bare bones of that training are that we don't take anything that doesn't belong to us. And, of course, that's a form of generosity. It's a way that we are generous both to ourselves in terms of our inner integrity and that we help others feel safe. And so we all know that we're here with each other. Sometimes when we're walking around our daily lives, we don't always get to have that safety of not having to second guess about whether anybody will take something of ours that doesn't belong to them. And that kind of generosity is what brings about true happiness. And the third precept we call true love. The bare bones of this in the Buddhist tradition is basically to refrain from sexual misconduct and to cultivate sexual responsibility. How important is that in our safety? And we can begin to understand what that means on deeper and deeper levels. What it means in terms of boundaries, what it means in terms of relationships, what it means in terms of who has power and who doesn't in relationships. Certainly we know that it means that we will not be invading each other's space in any way sexually during the course of the retreat, but when we start looking deeply into what these can bring us in terms of how we choose to live with some inner integrity as well as a global ethic, it is really quite wonderful. And the fourth one, I always think maybe we don't have to talk about it when we're keeping noble silence, which is such a wonderful container, usually has to do with right speech. But boy, my mind and my speech in my head is sure busy during the silence. So you might want to just pay attention to what's going on. One of the things that I have certainly found in my own life is that I can really commit to the healing power of non-aggression, to non-violence, and still go to war with people on a daily basis with my words. And so right speech generally means not lying and not exaggerating, but I think we can think of it as speech, engaging in loving speech and deep listening and saying that which is truthful, being authentic, but also being kind and saying what's useful. And the fifth precept The bare bones of it in the Buddhist tradition is not to abuse intoxicants. And of course, we would like you to commit to not taking any intoxicants. We're not Ram Dass in the 60s and 70s, or Timothy O'Leary, or Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan. So we actually are going to try to stay present rather than to do it in another way. I love to listen to Ram Dass talk about his life in the 60s. But we found that that's not really a way to wake up. So I think of taking no intoxicants, not just with respect to alcohol or drugs that are going to alter my state of being in a way that hasn't been medically prescribed for me, but I think of it in the form of unmindful consumption of any kind. I can become intoxicated with many, many things besides just alcohol in my own life. And so I think about it as really mindful consumption in terms of what I'm taking in to my body, what I'm reading, what I'm watching, what I'm listening to, where I'm placing myself, because it's a way that of being that provides nourishment and healing to ourselves and others. So as you can see, these kinds of trainings, these Buddhist precepts, we call them the mindfulness trainings because they are training us in how to be mindful. And they're a guiding northern star. They're not anything that anybody can do perfectly. But the whole point is to use them as a guiding northern star and not to beat yourself up if you notice something, but just to gently correct the course if you notice that you're off course in some way. So they not only contribute to the practice container for each one of us individually, as well as what we're creating here, but they also represent the Buddhist vision for a global spirituality and ethic that is really quite beautiful. And in Buddhism, the aspiration or intention in one's heart is a critical ingredient of any action that we take. And my own teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, who we refer to as Thay, says that true revolutionaries are able to let go of attachments because they have great aspirations. So great aspirations lead to ethical integrity, and they provide protection from corruption and grasping, whether it's in the form of materialistic benefits or fame or gain and loss of any kind. We have to know what we stand for our aspirations to be meaningful. So for some of us, the roadmap to leading an ethical life and the kind of life that brings us joy because it's building inner integrity is provided by the precepts or mindfulness trainings. Others create their own unique path. Either way, protection is offered in the form of that guiding northern star that I talked about, that provides some way to recognize when we have done or we're doing something that's inconsistent with our deepest and most heartfelt values that we want to stand for. And one of the things that I've noticed in many of the workplaces that I've been in many of the organizations that I've consulted for, is that for many of us, the decisions about what values that we stand for and aspire to are actually made by default rather than deliberation. So I love it that we start the retreat out with what our intention is for the weekend. And I would invite you to also get in touch with that intention for your life. What is it that you stand for? Because if we don't know what it is that we stand for, we're constantly at risk to sacrifice the things that matter the most or the things that matter the least. But I think it's really sometimes in the quiet reflection we can begin to notice. And in my own life, I have found that the intention to lead an ethical and meaningful life is one of the most critical elements of joy in my own life. And if we know what we stand for, we can notice when we're off course. I started putting in the last 5 years of my 20-year career as a police officer. I was the captain of personnel and training. I got to do all of the hiring, firing, training of recruits, in-service training. They were really sorry they gave me that job. But I realized, one of the things I realized is that we were not teaching people how to be emotionally safe, that we would give them all of these tools for how to keep themselves physically safe. We would tell them about the organizational mission. But I found that that didn't provide a lot of protection to these young recruits who had a lot of authority, had a lot of authority. When you have access to legal violence, if you're not humble about that authority, it can create a lot of harm. And so I started having them as their last assignment decide what it is that they stood for, because I wanted them to be clear about what they did when nobody was watching. And so I would ask them to go through what I call the core value statement. And I called the exercise that I took them through rekindling the sacred fire. So I would just invite you to think about what moves and inspires you, what resonates for you, what you want to aspire toward, what you take refuge in. If you were at the end of your life and you were telling somebody very, very important to you, a child, a niece, a nephew, a grandchild, a friend, this is what I stood for. And it was so wonderful that I figured that out early. So what I had them do is think about what view of themselves that they want to manifest, what they commit themselves to, what they take refuge in, so that it's something that they could hold out as a destinal resolve, so that everything they did at home and at work and in relationship to others could be in alignment with those values. So, and I said it should be a possibility that you can hold in front of yourself each day and that lights you up. So when we were sharing our intentions up here, Tara asked me about mine, and I went back to the intention that I created for myself many, many years ago that I still hold in front of myself each day. I said, well, my aspiration for the retreat is to receive inspiration and to provide some inspiration. And Tara asked me about what? And right away I said, mindfulness, peace, and justice. Because those are what I've decided my core values are, what I want to stand for, because they're the prerequisite for everything else that's important to me. So I encourage you to, and invite you to pay some attention to this and think about it. It doesn't have to be something that you do this weekend, but what do you stand for? And then make that possibility a now phenomenon, not a someday phenomenon, because there won't be any better opportunity in the future than there is in this very moment to start living that possibility. And the other thing about these possibilities is that once they're created, we have to ask ourselves, if I set my life up to live joyfully and to support these values, what would it look like? What would it look like at home? What would it look like at work? The things that I am choosing to do, are these reflective of the things I most deeply value? Sometimes we think this path is very, very, very serious, but a critical element of mindfulness is watering the seeds of joy and really understanding what that means for each of us. So what are your Zen activities? Those activities that bring you the joy of being totally absorbed in the activity for the sake of the activity. What are those things that resonate with your spirit? And that's a very, very important way to be mindful and to water the seeds of joy, is to be faithful to the things that bring you joy. what I found so often in organizations where people are working very, very hard, it doesn't matter what it is, but 3 or 4 years into it, I hear the I used to syndrome developing. I used to camp, I used to garden, I used to cook, I used to dance, I used to read novels. I used to do this, I used to do that. So for you, I don't know what those activities are that are going to nurture those core values and that are going to nurture your mindfulness practice. It might be tending your garden, it might be cooking, it might be camping, it might be spending time with your beloved, with your family, it might be sitting in silence, it might be boogie boarding. Tara and I share a love for boogie boarding. Playing sports, music, pottery. But I call these activities our Zen activities. And the reason is that anything that we do wholeheartedly is a way of awakening and deepening and sustaining the contemplative experience in this very moment, in this present moment. And we know from meditation that joy and ease come with the concentration or the absorption of the mind in a single pointed way into just one activity at a time. So you don't have to just sit there for 45 minutes or 20 minutes or 10 minutes or do sitting or walking meditation. My, you can engage and re-engage in the things that bring you joy. In order to do this in my own life, I always now I have my 2012 calendar, and I write down everything that I want to do, and then my work gets booked around that. So last year I took a 5-week solo motorcycle trip. After the last few weeks of being very, very busy, I'm headed to do some boogie boarding. I put my own personal retreats in there. And when I had a job that was very, very structured, I still did this. I still made sure that I got together with people outside of work who I cared about, who sustained and nourished me. So I really invite you to set your life up in a way so, again, that the things that matter the most aren't at the mercy of the things that matter the least in all areas. One story that I love about Thay is that he's always an inspiration in simplicity, the simple way to practice and bring joy into your life. So at Plum Village, there was a friend of his that arrived at Plum Village, and this person started telling Thay that he should stop gardening. Thay is a big gardener. He loves to garden. He especially loves to grow lettuce. And this person was saying, Thay, you have so much more to offer in terms of your writing and your poetry than growing lettuce. Why are you spending all this time gardening? And Ty's response was that if he did not grow lettuce, he could not write the poems and books that he writes. And so by doing the things that you enjoy, you awaken peace and creativity. And therefore, enlightenment is not separate from growing lettuce, if that's what gives you joy. So we all have to figure out what these activities are for us and consciously set our lives up and be in touch with the elements that we find refreshing so that we can figure out a way of living, not just this weekend, but in the rest of our lives that brings us some sort of peace and happiness. And the other thing that Tara and La both talked about that is so important is we are so hard on ourselves. So make sure that you really, really, really know that you are welcome here, as La said, just the way you are. And when you learn to welcome yourself just the way that you are, is that when they graduate to radical acceptance? Is that what it is? Okay. Good. So, and it is. It's a journey. We're so hard on ourselves. So give yourself a break and don't be afraid to make changes. So I just invite you over the course of the weekend to begin giving some thought to what it is you stand for and how to set that up so it's reflective of your entire life. And this isn't about what you want to achieve. It's about who you want to be. Joseph Campbell said that we can climb a ladder and get to the top of it and realize that we put the ladder against the wrong wall. So it's really, who do you want to be? Not what do you want to achieve, but who do you want to be? And every time that it's not exactly the way you want it to be, what's really, really great is that whether you've left your breathing, whether you've left who you want to be, that every breath is simply an opportunity to begin anew, moment by moment, breath by breath, again and again. And that's how we practice. So I hope you all have a wonderful retreat. And we're right here with you. And thank you so much for holding the container together that will benefit all of us. I look forward to spending the next 3 or 4 days with you. Thank you.
So we're going to close very, very shortly, but we'd first like to take a few minutes to sit together, and before that, please, just let your attention come right into your body and sense what your body could use right now, just in terms of the slight, subtle ways of stretching and moving and breathing, and just take a minute or so to listen and respond to your body. And as you're ready, come take a seat. And as you come into stillness, be aware of the sitting posture. Just feel from the inside out sense of sitting upright. And from the inside out, if there's any ways of softening, relaxing, letting go a little. Very beautiful way to enter any pause, any sitting, is a very slight but real smile. And just to sense the atmosphere, attitude that connects you with. A kind of benevolence, a basic friendliness. With a friendly attention, just to notice the experience moment to moment. Senses awake. A relaxed attentiveness. Aware of the sounds. Aware of this changing dance of sensation. Just receiving the sensations of the breath, the inflow, the outflow, in awareness. when the mind drifts, just gently choosing again once you've noticed to be here, to arrive again. May our reflections and practice and prayers this evening and through our time together be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all beings awaken. May all beings be free. Namaste. So we enter together now the noble silence. Each evening we'll invite you, should you like, it's a bit late, probably many are very tired, but should you like to stay, the hall is yours. This is your space. For those that choose to leave, and when you finally do, may your sleep be deep and refreshing. We'll see you in the morning. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.